And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
It is 9 minutes after midnight here on a Sunday morning, October 16th, 2016, program 121 in the series of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious and two-day after her birthday girl. What's up, Lisa?
Oh, the birthday celebration continues all weekend, it's okay.
Yeah, we were at Volare celebrating Lisa's birthday. We had Aleph Garris there, our producer. Hi, Aleph.
Hi, and happy belated birthday to you.
And thank you for my celebration pin. I am queen for a day.
We had a wonderful Italian dinner over at Volare right near WGN here, and we had a little tiramisu cake. We had a candle for Lisa. We sung her happy birthday. So we took care of her, folks. You know, we took care of little Lisa here.
You sure did.
On her, she's the birthday girl. So happy birthday, Lisa.
Thank you, Carl.
And tonight, well, actually this morning, we have two great radio shows. We're starting a little late because of baseball, but it was great. The Cubs won. Big home run, big grand slam in the top of the ninth, or in the bottom of the eighth, I should say. And we won the game, so that's fantastic. We have Murder at Midnight from 1947. Then it's the Screen Director's Playhouse presentation of The Uninvited. I think you're really going to like that. And all of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming crime thriller American Made as a TWA pilot recruited by the CIA to counter the communist threat in Central America.
All right.
And the winner will win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, my favorite pizza and home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
They do make a good pizza.
They sure do.
312-981-7200 is the number. And here's a hint. You'll recognize this guy when you hear his voice.
It's classified. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
All right.
Here's a hint. You'll recognize him when
you
hear
him. Here's a hint. You'll recognize him. 312-981-7200. Who is that actor? Win a Lou Malnati's pizza. We'll be right back.
This is show 121 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
It's classified. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
We have Marty on the line from Evergreen Park. Hey, Marty.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. We're glad you're with us. And tell us who that actor is.
Thomas Cruise.
You are right, Marty. You're a winner. You know what? You've won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can check out one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and look them up online at loumalnati's.com. Thank you so much for starting the show off with us tonight.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thank you. Tom Cruise proves that I could be a leading man, Lisa, because I think I'm about a half an inch taller than Tom Cruise.
You're not taller than Tom
Cruise. Yes, I am.
I don't think
I am.
Maybe if you stand on your tippy toes.
No, I'm taller than Tom Cruise.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
So that proves I could be a leading man in
That's
movies.
That's what it takes.
And I think I'm a year younger than Tom Cruise, too.
You're younger?
You yep.
How old is he?
I think he's 54, and I'm 53.
Well, I'm going to look that up right
now.
Pretty
sure he's a year older than me. He's in a little bit better shape than I am, though.
You're in good shape.
Yeah, he's in good shape, though.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise. He works out.
I'm sure
he
does.
He's pretty buff.
I'm sure he has a personal trainer and a personal chef and a personal chauffeur and the whole thing.
I'm sure he does. And I don't have any of those.
Well, maybe someday you can aspire.
All right. So it's Murder at Midnight to start things off. And you notice how I played it in the midnight hour? See?
Really sharp.
I was thinking.
I know it.
All right. So this is a mystery horror series. It came to ABC Radio in 1946. And the host was Raymond Morgan, a former Long Island minister who left the cloth for the excitement of radio. We talked about this a few weeks ago when we played one. It had a six-year run in syndication, and it had New York's best supporting actors, Lawson Zerbe, Carl Swenson, fellow Carl, Lon Clark, Barry Kroger, Raymond Edward Johnson, and it was directed by Anton M. Leder. It was a good series, very scary, very good series. This show is called Death's Goblet. It stars Eric Dressler. It's from April 11th, 1944. Here's part one of Murder at Midnight.
Murder at Midnight.
They'll hang me like a common criminal, and I didn't mean it. You know I didn't.
Oh, stop whining, Gerald. Take your medicine like a man.
What? All right, Harvey, I'll stop. You're responsible for the whole thing. You know you are. And since they can only hang me once, even for two murders...
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Death's Goblet. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of mystery and terror by radio's Masters of the Macabre. Our story by Sigmund Miller is Death's Goblet.
It all began at one of Arthur Cunningham's parties. He always gave a party when he came back from one of his trips abroad. I went there with Gerald, my partner, and his wife, Susan. Beautiful Susan. Did I care for her? People used to say so. But she was too self-centered a woman for me. Now, I like to look at her just as I like to look at anything that's lovely. That was all. As for Gerald, well, he was rich, which was the only reason he was my partner. But suppose I start at the beginning, at the moment we got to the party and Arthur came over.
Well, hello, Harvey. Glad you came.
Wonderful to see you back, Arthur. You know Gerald and his lovely wife, Susan.
Of course. Hello, lovely wife, Gerald.
Nice to see you again, Arthur.
Good trip, Arthur?
Marvelous. And you're just in time for a drink. Let's get away from this mob. Come into the study.
Yes, why not?
I just opened my last bottle of Chateau Albert.
Oh, nice.
Here we are. Oh, well, someone get the glasses out of the cabinet, will you?
Large parties make me very nervous.
Here we are.
Yes.
Hi. What an odd goblet this one is.
Oh, put that one back, Susan.
Why, what's wrong, Arthur?
Use any of the others, but not that one.
Oh, I'll be careful of it, if that's what you're worried about.
Oh, it's not that. I just don't want you to drink from it.
What's all the mystery about, Arthur?
Well, you'd all think I was mad if I told you. Take a look at it.
It's a very strange-looking glass.
Yes, looks Venetian, possibly from Murano.
It is.
This red spot here on the side.
Yes, it's supposed to be a drop of blood.
That's very odd. How do you know that?
Well, Gerald, this goblet has a legend, a terrible legend. And, of course, none of you will believe it, but the story is that anyone who drinks from this goblet will kill someone.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you believe it?
Why, yes, Gerald. You see, I've had proof.
Good heavens.
I once drank from this goblet.
What?
Arthur, you're joking. You mean that
yes,
you...
Yes, Susan, it was justifiable homicide, but after I drank from it, I did kill someone. He was a thief and he attacked me, but still, I killed him.
Well, you never told us about that.
Well, it's not anything that I care to remember particularly.
Oh, how terrible for you, Arthur. Where did you get the goblet?
From a murderer. A man who killed his wife. They were auctioning off his estate.
Extraordinary. May I look at the glass, Arthur?
Yes, if you like.
Everyone stared at the goblet in silence as I held it to the light. It had a delicate brown tint, reminding me of old blood, except that it sparkled and glittered. The spot of red did look like a drop of blood about to roll down the side. It seemed ridiculous that this inanimate object could make men commit murder, and yet there was something about it that fascinated me, and suddenly I wanted to drink out of it.
You seem very interested in my goblet, Harvey.
Yes, will you pour some wine in it for me?
What? No, Harvey. This happens to be one superstition I believe. Everyone who has ever put his lips to this goblet has killed. I don't know why it's so, but it is.
Oh, it's silly, of course, but why tempt fate?
Oh, nonsense, Gerald, nonsense. I'm going to drink out of it.
You'll have to pour the wine yourself, Harvey.
All right, I will. Well, here's, health and long life.
No, Harvey, I won't let you.
Oh, why, Susan, you shouldn't have done that. You've spilled some of Arthur's best burgundy and ruined a good tablecloth.
Well, it doesn't matter. I'm glad you did it, Susan.
I won't let you or anyone else drink from that glass.
It's strange to get so distressed about a ridiculous legend.
I don't think murder is ridiculous.
You know, I'd like to get rid of it. I was thinking of destroying it.
Well, why don't you just fling it against the fireplace?
No, I can't.
Huh?
I've tried several times, but somehow I couldn't.
Arthur?
Yes?
How about giving it to me?
I'd rather not.
Oh, come on. You want to get rid of it, and I have a fine glass collection. I'd like to add to it. I'll keep it locked up.
You'll be sorry, but if you want it that badly, Harvey, it's yours.
Arthur, please don't give it to him.
Susan, what's the matter with you? You watch over Harvey as if... Well, as if...
As if what, Gerald?
Oh, the whole business is absurd.
Of course it is.
Yes, and if I should drink out of it and commit a murder, that would be the most absurd thing of all. I kept the goblet on the mantelpiece in my library where the lamplight made it glitter. I discovered that the red drop was not paint. It was ingrained in the glass. Oh, very cleverly. One night, both Susan and Gerald were at my home. As we chatted, I got up, went to the mantelpiece, and idly toyed with the goblet.
That goblet? It's the one Arthur gave...
Yes, yes, you remember. He gave it to me.
Why don't you smash it, Harvey? Get rid of it. Ooh, gives us all the creeps.
Mm. Well, Gerald, you aren't really afraid of a piece of glass, are you?
You don't believe Arthur's story at all, do you, Harvey?
On the contrary, Susan, I do believe it. But not the way you think.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean to say murder is not in the goblet. It's in me, in you, even in Gerald.
What a silly thing to say, Harvey.
Oh, yes. You don't need a magic goblet to commit a murder. All you have to do is let yourself go. Let go of the civilized controls that tie you up. Why, Gerald, if you had cause, you could murder me or even your lovely wife.
Oh, I couldn't kill a fly.
Oh, but you could if the fly gave you enough trouble. Now, supposing, just as an example, supposing that you discovered that Susan was really in love with me and only married you for your money.
Harvey.
Wouldn't that make you want to murder her, Gerald?
Oh, you're crazy.
That's not very funny, Harvey.
Even you, Susan.
What?
Even though you have a lovely face and exquisite hands, even you could commit murder. Why, there must have been times when you hated Gerald, or only for a moment, of course. But in that moment, if you were not so civilized...
Stop it, Harvey.
Why, you could even put your lovely hands around my throat.
Oh, stop it, Harvey. You're not that important to her. And then just why are we on this gruesome subject?
That's Harvey's idea of humor.
Susan looked at me, a touch of red at the point where the cheekbones make the skin taut. She seemed angry, but she wasn't really. Oh, yes, she loved me. I could see it in her face. She looked at me for a moment and then dropped her eyes.
May I look at the goblet, Harvey?
No, I'm afraid not, Susan. You might accidentally drop it.
It might be a good idea.
Well, I have an even better one, Gerald. And that's to go home before we get really serious about this murder business.
I sat there staring at the goblet after they left. It fascinated me, glittering in the lamplight. And as I looked at it, it almost seemed as if the red spot of blood was moving, rolling down its side. Why shouldn't I drink from it? Why? And before I knew it, I'd taken it down and put it on the table. I got a bottle of burgundy, opened it, and I poured slowly, filling the goblet just up to the red spot. And then I drank from it. Seemed to me
that the wine had a different taste, although I drank this wine often and knew its taste well. It was delicious. I had another. It was heady, and it made me a little dizzy, although I felt fine and free. Yes, light and dizzy. But after a while, when the dizziness wouldn't go away, I decided to go for a drive, even though it was close to midnight. I drove fast. The speed and power of the car gave me a feeling of great exhilaration. I took the turns at full speed, enjoying the danger of the sharp curves. Then I came to a long, level stretch of road. I pressed down hard on the gas. The needle of the speedometer slowly moved upward. 60, 70, 80, 85. The road, like a black ribbon, rolled up in front of me. And then I suddenly saw him, but it was too late. I struck him with my right fender. He never made a sound. The car swerved a little from the impact. My heart in my throat. I stopped. Then I backed up. Back up to where the body was lying sprawled grotesquely on the edge of the road. One look was enough. He was dead. But no one had seen the accident. I stepped on the gas and drove off.
Death's goblet, and a man who drank from it. A corpse lying limp by the side of a lonely road. And a car speeding away as the clock strikes 12 for
murder at midnight.
Go out on a limb here, Lisa. That's an organ. Murder at Midnight. That's the first portion of Death's Goblet, starring Eric Dressler from 1947. We'll get back to it after these words. Hey, Lisa, you know what?
What, Carl?
We have thousands and thousands and thousands of these classic radio shows available on CD and also on digital download for our listeners. And we take two of our collections every single month, and we put them on sale. They're normally $19.99 for a six-hour collection to digitally download, but we cut the price in half to $9.99. You get 12 shows. And throughout the month of October, we're taking two of our scariest collections. They're like Hear the Fear for October. So you can get 12 episodes of Suspense and 12 episodes of Inner Sanctum. You can get either collection for only $9.99 or both collections, 24 shows, for only $14.95. Just go to WGNRadioTheater.com. You'll see a little promo for it, WGNRadioTheater.com. And Hear the Fear this October. Get 24 scary radio shows for Halloween. And we're playing Halloween shows all the way through the end of the month.
I was going to say, Halloween is exciting.
I know.
We love Halloween around here.
Absolutely.
Getting excited.
You know what? We started an hour late today or tonight because of Cubs.
Sunday night. It's the Blackhawks.
So is tomorrow Blackhawks?
It's tonight.
So, folks, instead of us being on at 11 o'clock, again, we're getting bumped an hour. So we'll be on at midnight. So tomorrow we're not going to play the first show, which is The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, or tonight, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. But we are going to play Our Miss Brooks and Suspense. That's tonight when we come back here.
At midnight.
At midnight. Yeah, so make sure you mark your calendar for that. But right now, let's get back to Death's Goblet from 1947 on Murder at Midnight.
And now, back to Murder at Midnight. Harvey challenged the curse of the goblet and found it true. He had just killed a man after drinking from it. Let's listen to him as he continues the story of Death's Goblet.
I knew now
that the story of the goblet wasn't a myth, and I also knew what I was going to do about it. The next night, I got Gerald to come to my house to do some work.
I can't make head or tail out of your cost estimates, Harvey.
Well, now, really, Gerald, it's very simple. Just concentrate.
Why can't you take care of it like a good fellow? I'm awfully tired.
Well, all right, let's stop for a couple of minutes. Have a drink.
What are you doing, Harvey? The goblet.
Why, you don't really believe that story of Arthur's, do you?
Well,
you're much too intelligent for that. Well, you only pretended in front of Susan, didn't you?
Well, I... yes. Had to pretend, you know, women.
Well, of course. And even if you did believe it, I have a feeling that... basically, you're pretty reckless, aren't you?
Used to be pretty wild when I was a young fella. Owned a motorcycle once, and...
Yes, I know, yes. Well, let's drink up. Find me a victim, will you, Gerald?
Huh?
Well, you know, according to the legend, I've got to murder someone. Maybe even you.
Harvey the murderer.
Yes. Very nice wine. How about another?
Right.
Well, here's to your lovely wife. And how about switching glasses?
Huh?
Well, you might as well get a kick out of it, too.
Okay. Here goes.
I watched the fool swagger as he drank down the wine. In an hour, when he was alone, he'd be shivering with fright at what he'd done.
Well, I did it.
You certainly did. By the way, Gerald...
Yes?
I checked Arthur's story about this goblet.
Yeah?
And it seems that he's right. Everyone who ever put his lips to this goblet has committed a murder.
You mean...
Well, of course, it's all coincidence, but... then again, who knows? All the next week, I kept reminding Gerald about his drinking from the goblet. I wasn't really trying to get him to kill, but it was amusing to see him get upset and uneasy. And I noticed he was getting a little bolder, particularly with Susan, and had developed a temper. And one night, just as I was about to retire...
Hello, is that you, Harvey?
Yes, Susan, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm just a little worried about Gerald. He usually gets home at about 6, and it's 11 o'clock now. Do you know where he might be?
Why, he's having dinner with his sister.
His sister?
Yes, a tall, dark girl. She was in the office today, and...
Harvey, Gerald has no sisters.
Oh, he hasn't?
No.
Oh, I guess I got him mixed up with someone else. Yes, it was Les Gordon who was meeting his sister. Yes, Gerald had some business to take care of over in Milford.
You're not very good at covering up, Harvey. I'm coming right over. Please wait up for me.
Good. Things were beginning to happen. It was becoming very interesting. Now we'd see.
Harvey, I want you to tell me everything. I must know. Who is this girl?
Take it easy, Susan. Come, sit down.
Oh, never mind that. What about Gerald?
I don't know anything about Gerald's private life. And besides, you're not the one to talk.
What on earth do you mean?
You know perfectly well what I mean. You don't really care for Gerald. Actually, you're in love with me.
Harvey.
Well, you are, aren't you?
Maybe. Sometimes I think I am. But you're too cold-blooded. I'd never be sure I could trust you.
As a matter of fact, you'd like to get rid of Gerald.
Why do you say that?
Well, I'm just putting your thoughts into words. You never really loved him, did you?
Oh, but Harvey...
And he's finally become unbearable, hasn't he?
Oh, Harvey, if you only knew...
Do you know that the last time Gerald was here, he drank out of that goblet of Arthur's? It's possible that... He wants to get rid of you, too.
Oh, stop it, you hear?
Well, I'm just telling you what I think you ought to know.
Oh, you see, I left word at home that Gerald was to meet me here. And if he does come, well, we'll see.
We sat and waited, not talking much. Susan's face was pale and agitated. It was most exciting. Susan, with all her charm and embellishments, was really a fierce, animal underneath. I could almost hear her rage seething.
Are you expecting anyone?
Just Gerald.
Well, let him in.
Oh, hello, Harvey. Susan, what's up? Why did you leave word to meet you here?
It's almost midnight. Where have you been all the evening?
At Milford.
With whom?
What's going on, anyway? What are you so excited about, Susan?
What were you doing in Milford?
Why, I went there on business.
Oh, really? You've been behaving very strangely lately, Gerald. If you don't love me, why don't you say so like a man?
What? This is all your fault, Harvey. You've been filling her head with poison.
I had nothing to do with this. I told her that you went to Milford.
All he did was to make me see clearly something I've felt for a long while. And I think this is the time to do something about it.
Sue, are you out of your mind? Put that gun down.
You remember it, don't you? You gave it to me. Said it might be useful in an emergency.
Harvey, take that gun away from her. She's liable to shoot.
She won't shoot. She's only trying to frighten you.
Am I? Let's see.
Oh, my shoulder. Give me that gun.
Give it. No.
Harvey. She's dead.
Yes, Gerald. And you killed her.
But it was an accident. She shot at me, and I was only trying to get the gun away from her. You know that's what happened.
I only know that you drank from that goblet and that you killed her.
What? But... Oh, you... You dirty, treacherous... You planned all this so that you could get rid of me. So that you could have Susan. You could have the firm for yourself.
You'll have to do better than that to beat the gallows, Gerald.
The gallows? Please, Harvey. We've been friends for a long time. You can't let me down.
You wouldn't have pressed the trigger if you hadn't had murder in your heart, Gerald. You shot her because you wanted to. That's what I saw. I believe in telling the truth.
Harvey, I'll turn over the business to you. I'll do anything, anything, if you'll just...
I don't accept bribes, Gerald.
All right. But I'll fool you. I'll call the police myself.
Well, there's the phone.
I'll prove my case in court. They won't convict me. Operator. Operator, give me the police. Hello? Police department? This is Gerald Hamilton. I just accidentally shot my wife and my friend's home. Yes, she's dead. The address is 411 Grove Street. That's right. I killed her. Accidentally. Yes. I'll be waiting here.
Cigarette, Gerald?
Oh, treating me like a condemned man, huh? Well, I'm not going to die. All I have to do is tell the truth about everything, including you.
Oh, but you forget, Gerald, there must be fingerprints, your fingerprints on that gun. That won't look very accidental, will it?
But Harvey...
You did it, Gerald. I saw you.
If you don't back me up, they'll hang me like a common criminal. Please, Harvey, don't let them do that to me, please.
Oh, stop whining, Gerald.
What? All right, Harvey, I'll stop. You're responsible for this whole thing. You know you are. And since they can only hang me once...
You raised the gun, but I'd been expecting it. I grabbed his hand, pushed it against his chest. My finger pressed on his and on the trigger. And suddenly, he went limp.
You won't get away.
My alibi was perfect. All I had to do was wait for the police that he himself had called. Minutes ticked slowly away, and then...
Hello, Harvey.
Arthur.
Glad I found you in. Say, you look as if you'd been in a fight.
Arthur, you'd better not come in.
Why? What's the matter?
No, you'd better not come in.
Well, but why?
Well, Gerald and Susan, they had a quarrel, and he killed her.
What?
And then he shot himself.
What are you talking about, Harvey?
Well, all right, come in. Look for yourself.
Good Lord.
Tried to kill me, too.
But why? It doesn't sound like him, like either of them.
Well, I don't know why. Fit of insanity? Or maybe it was the goblet. Your goblet. He drank out of it, you know.
The goblet? Why, that's ridiculous.
As he spoke, he picked up the gun. It made me furious. All those fine fingerprints of Gerald's were now erased. Put that gun down, Arthur. There are fingerprints on it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
I tried to get hold of myself. The stupid fool, he was going to ruin everything. But I had to keep calm. What were you saying about the goblet?
Why, it has no curse or magic. I just made that story up.
You mean...
Of course, I bought the goblet in an antique shop. As a matter of fact, I have a whole set of them.
The pulses hammered away in my head. A vast, uncontrollable anger seized me. Was it because of those precious fingerprints that he'd wiped out, or because I had believed in the goblet myself? I don't know. I only know that I had to fight to keep from grabbing him by the throat.
You know, I don't think you're telling me everything you know about this horrible business, Harvey. In fact...
A red hot wave came over me. I don't remember exactly what happened.
Let me go! Get your hands off me!
Arthur's body is lying there too now, next to Susan's and Gerald's. But the police will be here any minute, so I have to hurry. First, the goblet. There. That's done. No. Some of the broken fragments still glitter in the lamplight. I've got to crush them, grind them to powder under my heel. But there are always other pieces that I can't find. They're hiding from me. They're afraid of me. But I'll find every piece. I'll find them!
Three bodies lying huddled on the floor, and a madman crushing the fragments of the broken goblet to powder. As the police car drives up and the clock strikes 12 for
murder at midnight. Remember to be with us again when death appears at the door, wearing the face of a friend, and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight.
The part of Harvey was played by Eric Dressler. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leader.
Charles Paul was the organist on that, Lisa, so definitely was an organ there.
Well, then you are right again,
yes.
Carl Amari.
Yes, indeed.
Twice in a row for the night.
Murder at Midnight, April 11th, 1947, Death's Goblet, starring Eric Dressler. And that was Raymond Morgan as our host on that very creepy episode of Murder at Midnight. In our next hour, we're going to tune in to Rayma Land along with June Foray and John Daner in the Uninvited Good Mystery on the Screen Director's Playhouse. So stick around. You know what?
What?
And this could not
I fell for that, didn't
not,
I?
Not that I'm happy. Not that I'm happy that Lisa has a back problem, but I have a solution for your back problem, Lisa.
I'm listening, Carl.
Could not be better timing. We have a new sponsor that is going to get you whole. You're going to get fixed.
I am not whole now, but I want to be whole again.
No, seriously, what's wrong with your back right now? It's hurt. Tell me what's wrong with your back.
I'll tell you exactly.
Okay. We're going to fix you.
Yeah, I have some lower back pain, like across my lower back.
Just, okay, what is it from? From just because you're working out a lot more or what?
Probably. I'm not sure. I got it and I'm working out and I'm working on it.
Okay, so here's
know?
The deal.
Stretching
all right, we have a new sponsor, Teeter Inversion Table. I have one. That's why my back never hurts. And I was in gymnastics, okay? And I had like lower back issues after gymnastics. And I have a Teeter Inversion Table, and it really works. I use it almost every night. I just get on it.
So do you hang upside
down?
You
hang upside down. It adjusts to your height. You hang upside
even
down.
Even your height? All heights?
Ha, ha,
okay,
ha,
just checking.
Ha, ha. But these are the best, absolutely the best. They help me with my back. I have a couple of friends that had some back problems. I told them about Teeter, and they got it, and it's unbelievable. And for a limited time, you, Lisa, and all of our listeners can get a Teeter Inversion Table, plus a Better Back bonus pack valued at $200, absolutely free. The bonus pack is absolutely free. Now, the teeter is got all kinds of money-back guarantees on it, right? To get this, you just go to getteeter.com/radio. It's a special page for our radio show. Go to getteeter.com/radio and check out the teeter inversion table. You need it, Lisa.
I want to see you hang upside down, Carl.
I'm going to take a picture of me on it.
You should.
And post it.
That would
be
great.
Count Dracula, hanging
exactly.
upside down on it.
But yeah. How does it feel when you hang upside down?
It's great. And you know what, too?
Get like a head rush? No?
Yeah, but it's actually good. You know, you age because of gravity, right? So when you reverse gravity, I think I'm getting younger being on a teeter.
And taller.
It definitely.
I actually had one of those 4 years ago.
And what did you think of it?
I think it was fantastic. Yeah. I was using it for my back and my neck and my shoulder, and it really helped. It's a marvelous thing. Once you get used to being upside down like that.
Yeah. I mean, but it adjusts, and it's very safe, and you're locked in there. You're not falling out. It's absolutely cool. And you know what, folks? If you have any kind of back issues, this is the product for you, a teeter inversion table. Just go to teeter.com/radio, or you can call a toll-free number, 800-537-7188. So once again, that's 800-537-7188, or go to getteeter.com. Very important. Get Teeter, and Teeter is spelled T-E-E-T-E-R. So getteeter.com/radio. Check out a teeter inversion table. I have one. Lisa needs one. And Roger had one.
Yeah, I did.
What happened to yours?
Well, I didn't need it anymore.
Okay,
and
well.
I think I posted on Facebook, and I think someone came and picked it up.
All right. Well, get another one. Oh. All right. Let's go to news. Let's see. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. When we come back from the news, we're going to tune into the Screen Directors Playhouse presentation of The Uninvited.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize y'all's neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down.
Blood and neighborhood didn't rhyme that well, you know? But other than that, very good. Vincent Price there. And was this on the Thriller album? Is that what that was?
It was part of the Thriller song.
Yeah, I had that album.
I did too.
I saw that concert too, that tour, Thriller. It was a fantastic tour.
I saw
it at the
jealous.
Rosemont Horizon before it was changed to, what's it called now? Something else. It's called Allstate Arena or something like that. Yeah, I saw it when it was the Rosemont Horizon.
I wanted so badly to see Michael Jackson.
Oh, gosh. What a performer. Amazing. That's cool, Elif. I like that. Elif Garris, everybody.
I kind of just unearthed it from our computer.
Applause,
so.
Please. Applause. Do we have an applause there? No, that's all right. Okay. In this hour, we're going to tune into the Screen Directors Playhouse presentation of a very creepy movie called The Uninvited, starring Ray Milland, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming comedy Wilson as a lonely man who reunites with his estranged wife and meets his daughter for the first time.
Oh, what do they win?
A $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza.
312-981-7200 is the number. Here's a hint. He was the star of Kingpin.
There's got to be some way I can work this off. No. Some way I can make it out to you.
All right, give us a call if you know who that actor is, 312-981-7200. You might win a Lou Malnati's Pizza. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to show 121. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
There's got to be some way I can work this off, some way I can make it out to you.
We have Mark on the line from Glen Ellen. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Lisa. Hey, Carl. How are you?
Hey, Mark.
How's it going?
Good, thank you.
Good. You know that actor.
Woody Harrelson.
That is Woody, and you are a winner. You've got $25 to spend at Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can check them out at loumalnati's.com and order from one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Thank you for calling in, and we appreciate your listening to the WGN Radio Theater.
Thank you, guys, and I'm looking forward to some good pizza.
Thanks, Mark.
Way to go, Mark. Thanks for calling. Appreciate you. All right, buddy. It's time now for the Screen Director's Playhouse. This was big radio shows back then, Lisa. They took movies and they adapted them for radio. This was one of the best. Lux Theater did it, Academy Award Theater, Screen Director's Playhouse. And I don't know how they did it. They took like a 90-minute movie, edited it down to like 20-something minutes, and did a great job all the time. They had great writers, and they usually had the original film stars to appear before the microphones. And you'll hear an episode now of a radio adaptation of the very scary film, The Uninvited. This stars Ray Milland along with June Foray and John Daner. It's from November 18th, 1949, as heard on NBC. Here's part one now of the Screen Director's Playhouse.
From Hollywood, the Screen Director's Playhouse. Screen Director's Playhouse, star Ray Milland, production The Uninvited, director Lewis Allen. Hollywood Screen Directors present a tale for troubled midnights. The motion picture drama, The Uninvited, starring Ray Milland in his original role of Rick Fitzgerald.
I woke up. 5 in the morning. My skin creeping. My scalp crawling. I listened. I heard the dim surge of the ocean at the foot of the Devonshire cliffs not far from my window. Only 5 o'clock. And then... I was sure now. I hadn't dreamed that appalling crying. Could it be my sister Pamela in the next bedroom? There was no electricity in this old house. I lit a candle. I went to the door leading into the upstairs hallway.
Rick!
What? Oh, Pamela.
You heard it too, then?
What in heaven's name is it?
I don't know.
It comes from downstairs.
It comes from everywhere and nowhere.
I'm going down and search the place.
It's no use, Rick. There's never anything there.
You mean this has happened before?
All the time you were still in London while I was getting the house ready for us to live in.
But why didn't you call me or write me about it?
It's our home now. It's all we've got to live in. It sounds so terribly heartbroken.
But there must be some logical explanation.
It'll stop soon now. It always dies away at dawn.
No wonder we got the old place for such a low price. They tell me it stood empty for 10 years before... Shutter blew open.
It's the dawn breeze. I must have forgotten to latch up.
Listen.
I know. The sobbing is gone.
Oh. Is that all for tonight?
Is that all? It's every night, Rick. And if I don't get some sleep, I'll die.
No. Don't do that. It'll be different tomorrow night. You'll see. Oh, hello.
Aren't you the gentleman who bought this house for my grandfather?
Why, yes. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Stella Meredith. It was my mother's house.
Well, come in, Stella Meredith.
Thank you. I haven't been in this house since I was 3, and I've wanted to come so many times.
Then why didn't you?
Oh, my grandfather forbids it. He has some silly idea that I'm in danger.
Nonsense. You shall see the house, Stella Meredith, and I shall be your guide.
This is my old nursery.
Like it?
Oh, how pretty your sister has made it.
That's very pretty perfume you're wearing.
It's mimosa. Do you like it?
Oh, very much.
My mother always used mimosa. She died when I was 3 years old.
Oh.
May I see the studio now where my father painted?
Only it's the studio where I play the piano now. You may even persuade me to play something for you.
Don't stop playing, please.
Very flattering, thank you.
Father painted my mother's picture in this very room.
You don't remember that?
No. But Mother would sit on this platform wearing her soft white dress. Sometimes, of course, he'd paint the other one.
Other one?
He had a model, you know, a Spanish girl. People seem to get awfully hush-hush when I try to ask about her, though. You play beautifully.
It's a serenade to Stella by starlight.
You mean this Stella? Me?
And this candlelight.
Oh, it's the most exciting thing that has ever happened to me.
Is it?
Yes.
What's the matter?
All at once, a cold wind.
Yes, suddenly it is cold in this room.
And your music's gone so terribly sad. Why?
I don't know. It just came out that way.
And the candles grew dim.
There's a draught.
Oh, Mother was so young and beautiful, and she died so cruelly. Mother!
Stella!
Mother! Mother!
Stella, come back! I gathered my scattered senses and jumped up and ran after her. I passed Pamela, standing amazed at the foot of the stairs.
Rick, what's the matter? What's happened?
There's something evil in it. Stella! But she was out the front door, her dark hair flying, running wildly in the darkness, heading for the cliffs.
Stella!
I shouted after her.
Stella, come back!
Shouted again, pleading with her.
No, Stella, no!
The cliffs, I thought.
Stella, the cliffs!
The cliffs and the boiling sea beneath.
Stella!
Whatever sinister force had driven her out of the house was now driving her to destruction on those killing rocks. The brink was only yards away, a few steps. I reached for her, and my fingers caught in her belt, and I pulled her back. Back from the very edge of that awful precipice. Stella.
What's the matter?
Matter? You were going over the edge.
Was I?
Why did you do it, Stella? What drove you toward death?
Death? Why, nothing. I didn't feel I was in any danger.
Look below you.
Oh, the sea.
Yes.
This is where my mother fell.
Your mother fell here?
By this dead tree. She...
Are you all right?
Help me.
Stella.
Will she be all right, Dr. Scott?
She's resting nicely upstairs, Miss Pamela.
Well, is Stella entirely safe up there alone?
Why not?
Well, in the light of what just happened.
You're the one who sneers when I say this house is haunted.
Well, everybody in the village knows the house is peculiar.
Well, can you tell us anything about it, Doctor?
Do you know about Carmel?
Carmel?
The Spanish model Stella's father painted.
Oh, yes.
Stella's father was in love with Carmel. It was an open scandal.
But didn't Mrs. Meredith know about it?
Well, I suppose she just accepted the situation.
Where's this Carmel now?
She died in this very house a week after Mary Meredith fell to her death from the cliff out there.
Oh, she did fall then.
Ironically, she fell trying to save her rival from committing suicide. Or so they say.
Rick, Dr. Scott, don't you notice a scent in the room?
No.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
It's heliotrope.
No, it's mimosa. Stella's mother was fond of it. Stella tells me that... Pam has come back.
What, Rick?
Upstairs. Stella's not alone anymore. I know it. Come on.
Stella.
Stella, are you all right?
She's gone.
I'm here.
Stella, darling.
At the window.
Now, don't be frightened.
I'm not frightened. Don't you know who it is in your house? It's my mother.
Your mother?
Did you see her?
No. But when I woke up, I felt her in the room. Her scent, the mimosa, it was all around. I could feel her warm presence everywhere. And I felt something else. Something I've never known in my whole life. The knowledge that someone loved me very dearly.
You'd better take her home, Rick.
No. No, Mother is here. She wants me with her.
Your mother is dead, Stella.
I know.
But your grandfather will miss you. He'll be furious if he finds you here.
I know, but I love it here. I'll always come back.
Another time, Stella. Another time. Three, four, five. There it was again. Her grandfather was right. There was danger in this house for Stella. In the studio, when we'd first felt its presence, I had not smelled mimosa. But in that moment before dawn, with that awful sorrow in the house, I suddenly knew. I knew that there was a cold, cruel spirit which hated Stella, and a warm, scented spirit that loved her. There was not one ghost. Pamela, I know this. Stella Meredith is in danger in this house. She mustn't come here anymore.
But she loves it, Rick. How can we possibly keep her away?
By holding a seance.
A seance?
Only this seance will be rigged. We've got to fix it so that the ghost of Mary Meredith appears to say, in effect, Stella, I'm your mother. Forget Windward House and I shall find peace and happiness. P.S. There is a tall, excruciatingly handsome man named Rick Fitzgerald who wants to marry
you. It's wrong, Rick. I won't agree to deceiving Stella.
We've got to break Stella of this attachment to the dead. We'll rig the seance. That very night, we held the seance. We all sat around a table. Stella, Pam, Dr. Scott, and I. A single candle was burning. On the table, I chalked the alphabet in a big circle and the words yes and no opposite each other. An inverted wine glass stood in the center of the table. My stage was set.
I think the room is dark enough to begin. The important thing is that we should all believe.
Yes, so I understand. Well, what now?
Everybody puts a finger on the glass. Now, ask a question, Stella.
Is there anybody here? Is anybody...
The glass is moving.
Yes. The glass is on, yes.
Go on, Stella.
Are you my mother? Yes. You don't want me to go away from Windward House, do you, Mother? They want me to stay away. Do you?
Oh, that's a creepy show, Lisa.
It is. Like, you know
very
what?
Creepy.
We think the creepier the better, so
I
we
like
hope
the creepy.
That they agree.
I co-host a show with a creepy...
It's true, you do.
Creepy co-host.
Yeah, well, we get along pretty well
That
over
must
here.
Mean I'm creepy, too.
Must be.
That's the first portion of The Uninvited, starring Ray Milland, along with June Foray and John Daner, as heard on the Screen Director's Playhouse. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. If you can't get enough of scary radio programs, and you've got to go to WGNRadioTheater.com, our website, because we have a special throughout the month of October, and that's 12 episodes of Suspense and 12 episodes of Inner Sanctum Mysteries, 24 half-hour radio shows, all digitally remastered. You can digitally download either collection for only $9.99, normally $19.99, or both collections for only $14.99. Go to WGNRadioTheater.com. Hear the fear. We have some scary radio shows for you for Halloween. And Lisa and I and Elif are playing scary radio shows here on the WGN Radio Theater throughout the month of October. Right, Lisa?
Right.
Yes. Count. Ha, 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 ha. I always liked the Count on the Sesame Street. You know, I liked him the most. I liked Oscar the Grouch, too. I liked him.
You know,
he reminds me of my brother.
And the Addams Family, they're pretty Halloween-y. And yeah. The Munsters.
The Munsters were my favorite. I like the Munsters. Do you like the Munsters?
No, but the Addams Family was my jam back in the day.
Yeah, you liked the Addams Family,
did you ever see the show, like the Broadway show?
No.
The stage show of it?
Oh, I remember that, but no, I never saw it. How was it? Did you see it?
Of course I did.
How was it?
I loved it. It did not get great reviews, but I don't know. I really enjoyed it. So
the Munsters television show was very, very innovative.
It was very good.
It was very good. Fred Gwynne Herman Munster.
Lily.
And then you had Yvonne DiCarlo as his wife.
It's a great show.
Just great. Just a great series. Let's watch some.
Let's watch
some
Munsters.
MeTV plays them all the time. Yeah. They're great. All right, we're listening to Screen Directors Playhouse with The Uninvited starring Ray Milland. Here's the conclusion.
Rick, let go. You're keeping the glass from moving.
I'm not.
Let go, I say.
You better let matters take their course, Fitzgerald. All right.
No. You see? She said no. She doesn't want me to stay away.
Look, look, the glass is moving. I. G. U. A. God. I God.
God me from what, Mother? What?
C. A. R. M. Carmel.
That's enough.
Who smashed the glass against the wall? You, Pamela?
No one, Rick. No one was touching it.
Stella. Stella. Stella's in a trance. Stella! Don't touch her. It may be dangerous.
May I ask a question?
No.
It might help to try to reach her mind. Yes, try it.
Whoever you are, are you Mary Meredith, Stella's mother?
No, es ella. No, es ella. No le creen nada. No le haga caso, está mintiendo.
Oh, this is awful. I won't ask her anything else.
Es ladrón. Ladrón de mi cariño.
Is that Spanish, Scott?
I don't know.
Ladrón de mi cariño.
Stella.
She's fainted.
I'm afraid this has all been a dreadful mistake.
It was wrong. But she'll never be cured until this house is cured. Until then, Stella must never come here again.
I won't answer it.
I'll answer it. I'll go. Was Stella's grandfather in a cold, bitter fury over her presence there and her condition.
An outrage, you hear? An outrage.
I'm very sorry, sir. It won't happen again.
I warrant you it won't. My granddaughter will never enter this house again if I have to lock her up somewhere. Come, Stella.
Stella was gone, but my work had just begun. I had to avert a tragedy. I had to solve the mystery of Windward House, but where to start? I went to see Dr. Scott.
Any luck, Fitzgerald? You find anyone with a clue to what really happened here 17 years ago?
No. Everyone who was here with the Merediths then seems to be dead.
The trained nurse isn't.
Trained nurse?
I've been looking through the old casebook of my predecessor, Dr. Rudd.
No.
At the time of the tragedy, the Merediths employed a nurse for their child, a certain Miss Holloway.
Holloway?
Very, very much attached to Mary Meredith.
Well, is she alive? How can we find her?
She runs a place on Bodwin Moor called the Mary Meredith Retreat in honor of her long-dead mistress.
Hospital?
No, a mental institution. Strange woman. Strange place.
Bodwin Moor. I think I'd better have a serious talk with Miss Holloway.
Oh.
I shall be happy, Mr. Fitzgerald, to assist in any way I can concerning these manifestations at Windward House.
Well, to begin with, Miss Holloway, I know about the Mary Meredith-Carmel triangle 17 years ago.
Yes, it was the delight of the local gossips.
What were Mary and Carmel like?
Extraordinary women, both of them. But Mary Meredith, she was a goddess. Even her talk was lovely and sparkling. Oh, the night we sat before her fireplace, planning our lives.
Yes.
She met her humiliation and her fate magnificently.
About Carmel?
A Spanish gypsy. Beautiful and crafty and cruel.
Why did Mrs. Meredith stand for the situation?
She felt the decision to end it must come from her husband.
Did it?
Finally. To make it easier for Carmel, they took her to Paris, found a position for her, and left her there. Then they came back here with their infant daughter. For a while, they were almost happy together.
Then?
Carmel came back. She still wanted Mary's husband. Then, one stormy night, Carmel had been told that she must leave, this time for good. Oh, there was a ghastly scene, and finally Carmel, in a rage for revenge, ran to the child's room and snatched her up and ran toward the cliff. Mary raced after her. In the struggle, Mary fell to the rocks below. The baby was unharmed.
What happened to Carmel?
She escaped in the storm. Next morning, she crawled back in the early stages of pneumonia. I had to nurse her.
I see.
And now, please, I must be alone. Please.
What you tell me about Miss Holloway is very interesting, Fitzgerald.
A fanatical, a dedicated woman, Doctor.
Dr. Rudd, before me, disliked her intensely.
Professionally? Personally? How?
Listen to this entry from Dr. Rudd's casebook for December 10th, 1932. Called to Windward House, Meredith's model, Carmel Quesada, double pneumonia.
That tallies with what Miss Holloway told me.
December 12th, Carmel Quesada much worse. No attempt to warm her room. Found traces of snow in her bedroom.
Snow?
Spoke severely to Nurse Holloway. Absolutely criminal negligence.
Well, isn't that a pretty serious charge, Doctor?
When a man of Dr. Rudd's generation used it, it was very apt to mean murder.
Miss Holloway murdered Carmel?
She was very fond of Mary Meredith. Perhaps that's why Stella's grandfather sent her to Miss Holloway's for safekeeping this afternoon.
You mean Stella's there now? In that genteel madhouse?
Well, I venture she's safe with her mother's dearest friend.
Who was also guilty of criminal negligence? Oh, no. Dr. Scott, I must hurry. Be good enough to call my sister Pamela at Windward House. Say I'll pick her up in 15 minutes and call Miss Holloway, will you? Tell her to expect us. I'm on my way. Miss Holloway, when I was here before, why didn't you tell me that Stella was here, too?
The presence of our guests is confidential.
Please take us to her at once.
She's no longer here. I sent her away when Dr. Scott called to say you'd be here.
But why?
She was the happiest person in the world when I told her she might return to Windward House.
Windward House?
But her grandfather sent her here to keep her away from Windward House.
She loves it so.
You knew we'd be away and you sent her there?
Mary will be there.
Oh, you hate Stella. You sent her to her death.
Mary is waiting for Stella.
You're insane. Hurry, Pam. It may be too late even now. Drove headlong through the rain, racing the train to Windward House. We arrived in the early hours of the morning. The house was dark. We were on time. Stella hadn't arrived yet. And then, from the inside of the house...
It's Stella.
The front door flew open and Stella ran out, screaming fearfully, running for the cliffs.
Stella!
Come back! Something she'd seen or heard or felt in that horribly sick house of ours was sending her screaming in the darkness toward the windy cliffs. I ran after her, but she was very young and lithe, and driven by fear and drawn by demons, and I overtook her slowly, oh, so very slowly, as in a terrible nightmare. And at the very brink of the cliffs, I dove for her and flung her to the ground, the very brink of death, the very edge of darkness.
nothing but a few bruises, Stella. You'll be fine.
Dr. Scott, Rick, why would my own mother want to drive me to my death?
Darling, whatever drove you from this house couldn't have been your mother.
But it was. I saw her. It was a kind of a mist that glowed softly in the dark, coming toward me, just as my father painted her.
Then why did you run away?
I don't know. Something terrified me, drew me to the cliff.
Could the company endure one more excerpt from the casebook of Dr. Rudd? It's rather worthwhile.
You've the air of a man with knowledge, Scott.
This entry is dated a little more than 3 years before the final tragedy on the cliff. Meredith consultation, my office. Mrs. Meredith afraid she is going to have a child. Assured her she was not. A strange, cold, loveless woman refusing motherhood.
But
Meredith, poor man, wanting a child so desperately.
But there's Stella.
Now, listen. An extraordinary household. Carmel, the Spanish girl, worships Meredith. A lovely, pitiful creature, all love and womanhood.
Pitiful?
What does it all mean? I don't understand.
Stella, where were you born?
In Paris.
Where they took Carmel. They came back with their baby, or at any rate, someone's baby.
Rick.
The Meredith stayed in Paris for a baby to be born, yes. But I think to Carmel, not Mary. They took the baby as their own to avoid a scandal. That's why Carmel came back, to be near her baby, near Stella.
Then it was Mary Meredith who hated Stella, her rival's child.
Mary Meredith, who tried to throw the baby from the cliff and fell to her death.
And that's what Carmel waited here to tell me all these years. That she was my mother, not Mary Meredith. I'm Carmel's daughter. Rick, the mimosa.
She's here.
Oh, Mother, Mother, never weep again, because now I know. Never cry again in this house where Father loved you. Carmel, Mother. She's happy. Mother's happy. She's at peace at last.
Rick, look.
That's the mist I saw.
Mary Meredith. Dr. Scott, Pamela, get Stella out of here. I was alone. Alone with the thing that drifted and floated in menacing, gesturing filaments in the open French doors. A luminous mist becoming a face that undulated horribly. A face filled with hatred and malevolence. And I lifted the candelabrum with its flickering, guttering candles. Come on, you icy fraud. If it's Stella you want, you're too late, Mary Meredith. You've tried enough to destroy Carmel's child. So much for the legend of your saintliness, and you can go along with it.
Rick.
Here, darling.
Are you all right?
All right? I am magnificent.
It's so dark, darling.
Never brighter.
Mary Meredith.
Gone forever.
Oh, and I always thought she was my mother.
What? Good saints preserve me from ghosties and ghoulies and long-legged beasties and a future mother-in-law like me.
Uninvited was presented through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, whose current release is the William Wyler production, The Heiress, starring Olivia de Havilland, Montgomery Clift, and Ralph Richardson. Ray Milland will soon be seen in the Paramount picture, Copper Canyon. Lewis Allen's current production for Paramount is Chicago Deadline. Included in tonight's cast were Alma Lawton as Stella, Norman Field, Mary Shipp, John Daner, Georgia Backus, June Foray, and Dan Riss. The Uninvited was adapted for radio by Milton Geiger, and original music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. Screen Director's Playhouse is produced by Howard Wiley, with dramatic direction by Bill Karn. Portions of the program were transcribed. This is Jimmy Wallington speaking, inviting you to listen again at the same time next week when we present
Screen Director's Playhouse, star Dorothy McGuire, production Spiral Staircase, director Robert Siodmak.
Sunday on Hollywood Calling, you may be called by motion picture stars Maureen O'Hara and Dan Daly to win a wonderful prize and crack the Film of Fortune jackpot. Make a note to stick close to your radio and your telephone Sunday for Hollywood Calling. It might be your lucky day. Listen to Hollywood Calling Sunday on NBC.
Stay tuned for Bill Stern and the Sports Newsreel on NBC.
That is the Screen Director's Playhouse presentation of The Uninvited. Good mystery. A ghost story set in England. Ray Milland starring in that, along with June Foray and John Daner. November 18th, 1949, is heard on NBC. Hope you enjoyed that. Part of our Halloween programming. We have it all the way through the month of October. And tonight, when we come back here at midnight, we'll have our Miss Brooks, a good Halloween show. And then suspense. You won't want to miss that. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Dave Plyer just walked into the studio. Hi,
Dave.
Good
morning, everybody.
Good morning, sir.
I love the horror genre.
Great stuff,
you know?
Right?
Always. You know, that really gives true meaning to theater of the mind.
Really does.
I just absolutely love
what they could do with just some great actors, music, sound effects, and a script.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they can scare the daylights out of you,
yeah,
these radio shows.
Yeah, you know, every Halloween I head down south for something to go visit my cousins down in Champaign. And we throw a bonfire on, and there's about 20, 30 of us sitting outside. And we'll always throw on two or three old, and it's ages from probably 5 to 80 years old.
Right, so you scar the 5-year-old.
Yeah, I scar the 5-year-old. Yeah, but it's great listening to this stuff. And before you started the radio theater here, I had done a few around Halloween myself. Like, I have three, like, perennial favorites, and we're going to do those also on my show, and you're going to stick around today, and
yeah.
And we'll talk a little
Happy
bit about
to.
That.
Yeah. Sure.
But anyway, today on the show, Sven Gulli's going to be here, too.
All right.
So we're excited about that, and he's had some... think about this. The guy's been on the air 37 years, and he's had the biggest ratings ever of his program. He had 1 million people a few weeks ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is big.
Huge.
Which is big through MeTV. So,
unbelievable.
And he's got the Sven Gulli stomp and all kinds of other stuff. So we're gonna hang out with him, which is kind of a tradition on the show. And then it is the 50th anniversary of It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Oh, man.
So we've got Jill Schultz, who's the daughter of Charles Schultz, that's going to join us and talk about his legacy as well. So we've got a lot to jam in today.
I love
and
it.
Cubs baseball.
Oh,
we have
gosh.
To talk about Cubs. Because my eyes are drooping from from watching the game.
And you
tonight.
Got your Cubs sweatshirt on.
I do, yes.
So I'll be happy to stick around and talk
right.
about some classic radio
cool.
shows for you. But Lisa
Excellent.
And I will be back here along with Elif at midnight tonight. And we'll play Our Miss Brooks, a good Halloween show with Eve Arden. And then we're going to tune into Suspense. So that's coming up.
After some more Cubs postgame.
That's right.